Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter. Today is June 28, 1980, and this is my audio letter number 55. As most of you know, I am resuming the audio letter today after a silence of 4 months. My feelings at this moment are hard for me to express, but for all of you who have stood by me when it mattered most, I want to say a few personal words. Because without your loyal support, I might never have returned to this microphone. Just before I entered my recording studio last February 24th, I began to feel slightly ill. At first, there was only mild discomfort, but somehow I knew that it was something serious. I tried my best to record audio letter 54 while I was still able to do it. I got about two-thirds of the way through the recording session before I was overcome by a massive heart attack. I didn't want to let you down, but I simply could not finish. On the way to the hospital, I knew that I would not be speaking to you again soon, so I gave instructions for the release of the unrecorded final portion of audio letter 54 in printed form. During the time since my heart attack last February, my associates have released 3 progress reports to keep you informed. I won't go over all of that again now, but it was a dark and difficult time for a while, not only for me, but also for my associates, and especially my wife and 3 children. I entered those hospital doors on the brink of death, and I truly believed that I had failed in my mission. During at least the first week of my stay in intensive care, I felt no will to live. At one point, I was even told by my doctors that I had gone through death's door, yet had somehow come back again. The doctors were prepared for the worst, but yet something of a miracle began to unfold. From all over the United States and then Canada and then around the world, I began receiving messages of cheer and encouragement. Countless beautiful cards with equally beautiful personal wishes written on them. Telegrams telling me of prayer meetings on my behalf. Inspirational and religious books and pamphlets of all kinds, letters and books with suggestions to improve my health. There were flowers, there were gifts, there were religious relics, on and on until it grew into an avalanche. For weeks, I was not well enough even to look at all these things, but I could not believe my ears as I was told what was taking place. I had entered the hospital spent and exhausted, convinced that all my work had been in vain. But several weeks later, when I left the hospital to go home, it was with renewed hope and determination to carry on. And in that spirit, I have been regaining my strength against all the odds. So it is that I speak to you once again today. That, my friends, is what you did for me. I will never forget all of you who stood by me in my hour of need. And I promise you that I will always do everything in my power never to let you down. It was 5 years ago this month in June 1975 that I began recording my audio letter intelligence reports. It was a shaky beginning because I was recovering from my first heart attack. And yet, little more than a year later, I found myself at the Pentagon because of the audio letter. I had been invited there by the late General George S. Brown, then chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. My conference with America's top military officer was about the secret nuclear crisis then underway. Of all the information media in the United States, only the audio letter had made the crisis public. In audio letter 16, I told my listeners about the crisis conference with General Brown. General Brown was doing his duty by taking urgent actions to prevent imminent nuclear war. And yet, America's controlled major media said not a word. Even after Pentagon spokesman confirmed my meeting with General Brown to newspaper reporters, there was almost no publicity. From that point onward, America's fortunes have gone downhill steadily. Having staved off nuclear disaster for the moment, General Brown found himself deserted and alone. Within weeks after our crisis meeting, General Brown began to be cut down by bad publicity. He was quickly neutralized by America's enemies within. He did not even serve out his tour of duty except in name, and soon we were told of his untimely death. In audio letters 17, 21, 23, and 46, I revealed the facts about the downfall of General Brown. While America slept, our last great patriot in government was whittled down, taken away, and finally murdered. 4 years ago, the prospect of imminent nuclear war sounded unbelievable to most Americans. Something called détente was still in effect, or so we were told. But public knowledge is always years behind the truth. So today, war fever is all around us. This month, I'm beginning anew with my audio letter series. Once again, I'm doing so on the heels of a heart attack, just as I did 5 years ago. But this time, there is a difference. 5 years ago, very few Americans would listen seriously to warnings about secret plans for nuclear war. Today, it's a different world. We're all hearing about false nuclear alerts, worries over Russia's military power, and so on. Most of us are waking up far too late. We have waited too late to avoid many great disasters because they have already been set in motion. But if enough people wake up soon, there may still be hope that our planet will survive. That is the goal to which I dedicate my audio letter series from this day forward. As I launch year number 6 of my audio letter, I will try to serve you better than ever before. For that purpose, I'm now introducing the first change in format of my reports in 5 years. As you know, my standard practice is to present some introductory remarks followed by 3 major topics, and I will continue to do this. But from now on, I will also add a brief final section called the last-minute summary. My new last-minute summary will help me do several things better than before. For example, I sometimes receive urgent information at the very last minute before recording an audio letter. Whenever this happens from now on, you'll hear about it in my last-minute summary. I'll also try to highlight major points from the topics I've discussed. By doing these things, I want to make my audio letter even more up-to-date and more useful to you than ever before. My friends, during the past several months, the drums of approaching war have been beating louder and louder, and day by day, more Americans are falling into step in the war march. For the first time in a generation, the word patriotism is being revived in America, and after years of being trampled into the dust, the American flag is suddenly being waved high for all to see. The Pied Pipers of war are using the symbols of America to lure us into national suicide. They are not trying to revive true patriotism, which is based on loyalty and love for our country. Instead, our so-called leaders are selling us a cheap substitute, tough guy patriotism, based on hatred. Today, a patriot is anyone who hates Iran, anyone who hates Russia, anyone who is ready for war. And those who have trampled on our flag for so long are holding it high today for a reason. They know that the American spirit is not dead, even though it has been stifled for so long. They know that even today, Americans by the millions will still rally around the flag. And so, the Pied Pipers are using the Stars and Stripes as their banner to lead us all to war. My 3 special topics this month are topic number 1, the public signs of nuclear war fever. Topic number 2, multiplying disasters in the expanding secret war. And topic number 3, battle to the death in the Kremlin. Topic number 1, during the past 4 months, I've had to be silent about the growing dangers of nuclear war. But the visible signs of approaching war have been speaking for themselves. For example, there's the draft registration issue. Last March, when this Bolshevik administration first brought it up, tens of thousands of draft-age demonstrators took to the streets. So the Bolsheviks, who now control our government, put it on a back burner to cool off. They waited until summer, when students would be home from college, scattered and unable to organize. Then they acted fast. This month, it became law, as did another war measure, the standby gas rationing plan. Measures like these are helping to raise the pitch of war fever by one small degree after another. But to the Bolsheviks here who are responsible for these measures, something else is even more important. Draft registration and gas rationing plans are designed most of all to control you and me. To the Bolsheviks who now infest America, war, even nuclear war, is only a means to an end. The end is their own Bolshevik dictatorship over us all. And they are so consumed with their frenzy for control that they no longer care very much whether the United States wins or loses the war. Either way, they now believe that they will somehow end up with the remains of America within their grasp. And so we are plunging down the road to nuclear suicide. Another sign of this is the series of nuclear false alarms. In Audio Letter 52 last November 1979, I called your attention to the first of these false nuclear war alerts. And early this month, on June 3rd and June 6th, there were two more false alerts. As I told you last November, the Bolsheviks here are actually carrying out deliberate tests by means of these false nuclear alerts. The American strategic military forces were designed for the purpose of retaliation against a surprise attack. But now, those who control our military strategy are planning for America to strike first. And so, Bolshevik agents are now testing ways to falsify all the early warning signals of a Russian nuclear attack. Once they have perfected their false alarm techniques, they will be ready to set off nuclear war at any moment. By fooling our entire early warning system, they will set off massive retaliation by our ICBMs, missile submarines, and bombers. The crews of missile bunkers, submarines, and bombers will do their duty, believing America has been attacked. But in reality, we ourselves will be firing the opening shots of all-out war. America's early warning network involves a number of complex systems. As a result, several different kinds of falsified data will have to be fed into the computers in order to simulate an all-out attack. Each of the false alerts has been testing a different part of this plan. For that reason, more false alerts may still take place. But all three nuclear false alarms have had one thing in common. The first line of defense in our early warning system is supposed to be our fleet of early warning satellites over Russia. We're told that they keep a continuous watch for the launching of ICBMs. And sure enough, all three nuclear false alarms have started with incorrect satellite signals about Russian ICBMs. My friends, the satellite signals are the easiest part of the Bolshevik plans to falsify a Russian nuclear attack. As I revealed over 2 years ago in Audio Letter 33, the United States no longer has any early warning satellites over Russia. They have long since been blasted out of space by Russia's fleet of Cosmos Interceptor killer satellites. Since that time, all of the alleged early warning satellite signals monitored daily by NORAD have been artificial. But it is an easy matter to change those signals to make them say that Russian missiles are on the way. It has now been nearly 2 years since I first reported America's shift to a first strike nuclear strategy. But the first official admission of this drastic change took place only 4 months ago, on February 21. On that day, Pentagon spokesman Thomas Ross said that America might shoot first, quote-unquote, in a nuclear war. But to this day, most Americans still believe that America's military posture is a defensive one, and so we cannot comprehend what we see in the news of mounting nuclear war fever. It is all around us, my friends, and yet we cannot understand because we are not told the truth by our leaders. Day by day, we are hearing about nuclear weapons designed for offensive use, but we are conditioned to see only self-defense in all these things, which leaves us unable to see what is really happening. One of the new weapon systems we keep hearing the most about is the so-called MX mobile missile. As with everything else, we are told that it is strictly a defensive weapon. It is said that our existing stationary ICBMs might be knocked out by Russia's incoming missiles. So the new MX missiles will have to keep moving around to make them harder to hit. But the stories we're hearing about the MX program are a mixture of half-truths and lies. The whole MX controversy is just a smokescreen to hide America's real mobile missile program. We are told that the giant MX missile system cannot be ready for another half decade. But the fact is that mobile ICBMs are already being deployed here in the United States. Their deployment began over 6 months ago in late 1979. America's real mobile missile is not the MX, and it is not a defensive weapon. It is intended for use in a nuclear first strike against Russia, and it is called the Minuteman TX, the Traveling Minuteman. Nearly a year and a half ago, in Audio Letter 42, I revealed America's deployment of one type of mobile missile worldwide. The missiles I talked about then are deployed secretly, not only in the United States, but in Australia, New Zealand, and elsewhere. But those missiles are only mobile in a limited sense. They can be set up quickly at unprepared sites and move from one site to another from time to time. But America's new mobile missile, the Minuteman TX, is another matter. It's designed to be moved constantly until almost the moment of launch. The public stories about the alleged MX program serve several purposes. For one thing, they are helping to condition us to the growing prospect of nuclear war. Even more importantly, the MX is being used as an excuse for funding, which is actually going into the secret TX project. The latest example of this funding trickery took place only a few weeks ago in early June. The Senate Armed Services Committee of the United States approved over $1.5 billion for the MX program. In addition, funding was also authorized for deploying 100 more Minuteman missiles. They look like separate measures, but they're actually both related to the secret Minuteman TX mobile missile project. The publicity surrounding our supposed MX missile program also serves one other very important purpose. That purpose is to keep the Traveling Minuteman project a secret, even from most of those who are working on it. Any large modern weapons program involves many thousands of people, and the Minuteman TX program is no exception. There are engineers, technicians, manufacturing personnel, managers, secretaries, and so on. But the vast majority of these people are led to believe that they are working on the MX program, all kinds of projects which are actually meant for the Traveling Minuteman are carried out under the false heading MX. In some cases, other known missile programs are also used as a cover for work on the Traveling Minuteman. What makes this technique successful is the fact that all the work on the program is subdivided into many separate tasks. For example, one engineering design group may be given the job of designing a mobile launch tower. They're told that the design is part of the MX program, with operational deployment years away. But they are also given the explanation that a few are needed now for developmental purposes. And so, they design the launcher, build a few, and deliver them after doing any necessary testing and redesign to make it work properly. Next, the launcher design is broken up into several chunks by a secret working group within the Minuteman TX project. The various portions of the launcher are then contracted out for production by several different manufacturing concerns. Each individual chunk is unrecognizable, so they have no idea that they are making parts for a secret weapon. And so, only a tiny handful of people fully understand what's going on. They are the people who coordinate the whole thing and bring it all together. The super-secret Minuteman TX program is being carried on almost in the open, but the constant publicity about the supposed MX makes it all unrecognizable to us. And whenever necessary, the publicity about the MX cover project is adjusted to maintain the secret. It's a highly sophisticated technique. And if you've heard Audio Letter 26, it may ring a bell with you. The cover-up technique for the Minuteman TX is very much like what was done in America's Moon program. Project Apollo was a military program from start to finish, but we never realized that because it was flooded with publicity that made us believe otherwise. Today, the clever publicity about a decoy program called MX is being masterminded by a man who is uniquely qualified for the task. He is the same man who orchestrated the great publicity that hid the real secrets of our moon program. His name was once a household word, but he was far more important than we were ever told. He was often called the voice of the astronauts. His name, Colonel John Shorty Powers. Early this year, on January 19, 1980, there were news reports that Powers had been found dead in his Phoenix home. But that, my friends, was only a cover story to explain his sudden disappearance. He has been tapped in order to coordinate all the MX cover-up stories which we are now hearing. Powers lived alone, and it was little sacrifice for him to go underground for his new secret job. America's deployment of Minuteman TX mobile missiles is secret, and yet it is going on right under our noses. If you live in certain parts of the country, you have a good chance to see for yourself a Minuteman TX railroad shuttle car. You may even have seen one already without knowing what it was. Let me describe it so that you will know what to look for. A TX railroad car is somewhat like a boxcar, but wider and much taller than most boxcars. Also, a TX car does not have a flat roof like a boxcar. Instead, a TX car looks a little like a long, slender barn on wheels. The roof has sloping sides several feet high, with a narrow, flat strip along the top. This unusual shape provides the necessary space for the long, slender ICBM resting on supports inside. The design of the TX railroad car illustrates the rush-rush nature of the whole Minuteman TX program. It was borrowed in large part from an existing design for a special railroad car used by certain aerospace companies, but most TX cars are not even built from scratch. Instead, flat cars used for carrying truck trailers are being commandeered. The flat car is given extra reinforcement if necessary to handle the weight of the missile and launcher. Then the odd-looking TX transporter shell is built on and painted a nondescript brown. The resulting railroad car is a strange combination of old and new. The shell on top may be smooth, fresh, and clean, but the base it is built on is likely to have old paint, rust, and the scars of years on the rails. In certain parts of the country, TX cars can be spotted fairly often in the midst of normal freight trains. First, empty TX cars can be spotted in the areas where they are built, such as Chicago and St. Louis. The missiles are built in Washington State, California, and Colorado, so the TX cars can be spotted in those areas. The special mobile launchers are built in Texas, near Dallas, and TX cars can be seen in that region. The final mating of the missiles and their launch control systems takes place under direct military supervision. This is done in a vast underground complex in the southwest corner of Fort Hood, Texas. From there, the Minuteman TX missile cars head north for operational deployment. This deployment is being coordinated from Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota. The Minuteman TX traveling missile is being deployed along existing railroad tracks in our northern tier of states. The tracks have recently been removed from normal freight hauling service. This has created outcries from farmers left with no means to get their crops to the market. They are among the first victims of the secret Minuteman TX traveling missile project. When the missiles are fully deployed, they will be in every northernmost state from Washington to Wisconsin. Every Minuteman TX missile now deployed is being shuttled back and forth over a long stretch of railroad track. It rides in its mobile launch car, covered against the weather and sightseers. A locomotive moves it up and down the track according to instructions called stochastic programming. These instructions tell the locomotive to speed up, slow down, stop, back up, stop, go forward again, in an unpredictable fashion. The idea is to make the missile and its mobile launcher a very difficult target. Right now, Russian Cosmospheres are hovering on guard over every TX missile. These platforms, which America decided not to develop in the 1960s, carry beam weapons which could blast the missiles. But as I explain in Audio Letter 42, American military planners are hoping to stun the Cosmospheres briefly as war begins. And so, they are neglecting the Cosmospheres in planning their nuclear first strike with TX missiles. When the Bolsheviks, who now dominate America, decide to set off nuclear war one, here's how they presently plan to do it. First, they will use their tested methods to swamp NORAD with false warning data of a Russian attack. America's entire strategic retaliatory forces will respond by attacking Russia. But even faster, our secretly deployed Minuteman TX missiles will go to war. In the opening moments of the NORAD war alert, a special attack order will be flashed across the Minuteman TX system. Within 30 seconds, the locomotive pulling each missile car will break to a stop. As it does so, explosive bolts will blast the cover off the launch car, exposing the missile inside. At the same time, powerful hydraulic pumps will be started. As soon as the missile car comes to rest, safety locks will release the missile erector. Within 15 seconds, ear-shattering pumps will raise the Minuteman TX ICBM to firing position. Moments later, the launch car will be engulfed in rocket exhaust as the missile streaks off toward Russia. Unlike the United States, Russia does still have early warning satellites. The American missile attack will be detected, and within minutes, Russian missiles will be on their way. The early phases of the NORAD war alert will be like the false alarms which have already taken place. But about 10 minutes into the alert, the false alarm phase will be over. That is when our ballistic missile radars along the Arctic Circle will first detect the approaching swarms of Russian ICBMs. By means of false alarm trickery and goading Russia into a missile attack, the Bolsheviks here believe they will at last achieve their goal, all-out thermonuclear war.